have I given this land from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. So here in verse 8, God is trying to make a covenant with Abraham, and Abraham says, "But God, how do I know?" And he wanted some kind of certainty, a confirmation from God. And God said to him, "Okay, Abraham, I want you to go out and get a heifer and a goat and a ram and a turtle dove and a young pigeon, and you bring them, and for those four-footed animals, I want you to divide them in half and lay one part on this side and the other part through this side." And the birds he didn't, but he kind of lined them up. And then it says that God caused a deep sleep to come upon Abraham. And there in verse 13, he says, "Know of a surety," or for absolute certainty, "that thy seed shall be a stranger in the land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them for 400 years. So the bondage that they went in or were about to go into was very much a part of God's plan for them. And he tells Abraham that this, in fact, is going to happen. And then in verse 17, God alone passes through those animals. And this is the way a covenant was made between two individuals. If Ralph and I were to make a covenant in those days, why, we would take, and rather than getting out a piece of paper and all the rest and signing our names to it, we would take an animal and we would divide it in half. And what we in fact were saying, that if I do not live up to my word, then as the blood of these animals have been shed, so let my blood be shed. And it's interesting that only God passed through. He did not allow Abraham. And again, we come back that God had made an unconditional covenant or promise to Abraham. It was not conditioned upon anything that Abraham did, but solely upon what God said that he was going to do. And then in verse 18, God extends the land that he had originally given. Remember, he had given him the land of Canaan. And last week, I think that we talked about where God said to Abraham, "Now I want you," and this is after Lot had departed, he said, "I want you to look, you know, to the north, and I want you to look to the south." And from wherever Abraham was, apparently he could see, you know, over 100 miles from that high place to Dan way up there in the north, all the way to Beersheba down in the south. But now God comes along and he said, Abraham, in verse 18, and this is important for us, that I am going to give you, "And that same day the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river Euphrates." Now before, when it was from Dan to Beersheba, there was a little strip, you know, of land there that went anywhere from about 25 miles to about 50, depending upon the curve of that Mediterranean coast there. But now God says, "Listen, I'm going to give you that land that reaches all the way down to the river of Egypt." And there he is not talking about the Nile, but further on down south there in that desert area, there is a land known as the River of Egypt. And on a good Bible map, you can find that. But now he says, "I'm also going to give you that land that reaches all the way over to the Euphrates River." And so that whole land mass there was going to be given to Abraham and to his seed forever. So God walks through that and he says, "Abraham, know for absolute certainty." Now today the Jews are in that land that really has more to do with just that first covenant, that land from kind of Dan to Beersheba, and they don't even have all of that, but fitting in there in that 25 to 50 mile range, and it's just the old, you know, what we call that land of Canaan belonged. But someday there's a greater portion of that land that's going to reach back, and all of that is going to belong to them. And that may not happen until the millennial reign of Christ, but it is going to happen since God gave that. And so hopefully with that, God settles now this land problem of what he is going to do. But again, there is still this other problem, the fact that Sarah is barren. And Sarah comes along, and we may as well turn over here in our little map. You can follow it down there. Went too far, didn't I? No, I sure didn't. There we go. Now, the fact that Sarah was barren, and she came up with a little plan that would help God out. And apparently this was very much a practice in their day, where she said, now, listen, Abraham, it is plain that I am never going to have a child. So why don't you take Hagar, my handmaiden, and you go in unto her, and she'll be kind of the surrogate mother, and we will have children through her. And she kind of plays junior Holy Spirit here and is going to give God a helping hand. And Abraham, he kind of liked that. And lo and behold, he goes into Hagar, and a child is born, Ishmael. But that child was not God's plan nor intention. His plan was to fully give to Sarah, even in her old age, a child. And gang, every time we take it upon ourselves to play junior Holy Spirit and give God a helping hand, we normally end up confusing the situation. And I have learned in my life that when I have figured out a way for God to do it, then you just may as well come along and X that out, because God isn't going to do it that way. He doesn't need our help. If he said he is going to do it, then what we need to do is to believe God to do it and allow him to work it out. But they didn't. And now Ishmael is there, and God had said that, Abraham, I'm going to make of your seed a great nation. And so now God has got to make a great nation out of Ishmael here. And he, through his descendancy, is the father of Islam. And Islam today, look back and they say, Abraham is our father. The Jews look back and they say, Abraham is our father. And those two groups are just at one another's throat, not only with the Jews, but then the Christians. We look back and we say that Abraham is our father. And it is harder to convert people out of Islam than anything, to convert Buddhists, to convert Hindus, to convert people out of animistic religions is not a difficult thing at all. But when you come to Islam, they are absolutely fanatical. And if you convert, they just as soon poison you and be done with you as to allow you to live. And there are not a great deal of Muslim converts anywhere in the world. They don't just sink a coffin in the ground unless you literally are in that coffin. And they are opposed to Christianity. But now God is confronted with this seed, and he needs to make a new nation of it. And then in Genesis chapter 18, in verse 8, it says, "And I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God." And God said to Sarah, "Thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him." It was God's intention that Sarah should bear a son, and that son was going to be Isaac, and the promise was going to be carried down through her. And then in Genesis chapter 21, verse 2, "For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him." So God did have not only a plan, but he had a time for that, and whenever we get out from underneath it, disaster is going to come. We need to sit back and to allow God. Now, let's just quickly take a look at an overview of what is happening here. Abraham has these two sons. The promise is carried on through Isaac, and Abraham arranges a marriage for him, and he marries Rebecca, and they have two children, and their name is Jacob and Esau. And before they were ever born, God said that the older is going to serve the younger, and you remember how Jacob took that situation in his hands and comes along and tricks Esau out of his birthright, and then eventually steals the blessing from Abraham for himself. And as a result of that, has to end up fleeing for his life. And God eventually deals with him, and Jacob becomes the father of 12 sons, and those 12 sons over here become the 12 tribes of Israel, and the promise here is carried through the tribe of Judah. But God said, "Abraham, your seed is going to go down into Egypt, and it's going to be down there 400 years. And God comes along and takes this young man by the name of Joseph and allows his brothers to sell him into slavery down there. And because of his goodwill or his ability to trust God, for what God said he was going to do, God blesses him and eventually brings him to the place where he is the prime minister, and God prepares the way for the children of Israel to go down. And initially the times were very good. They lived under the blessing of the Pharaoh, but then that Pharaoh died and another one came to power, and they were in bondage for some 400 years. And it's interesting to note that whenever Jacob came down, he reminded Joseph of the promise that God had made. And it's interesting that at the end of Joseph's life, that in Genesis chapter 50 and verse 21, that Joseph reminds the children of Israel, "And Joseph said unto his brother, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land unto the land which he swore to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob." And somehow in the mind and in the heart, these people held on to the promise that God had given to them, that that land was to belong to them. And it was to be Abraham's land and to his seed, and they were going to possess it forever. And while they were down there, of course, the seed multiplies from there were 70 that originally went down, and when they came out, there was somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 2.5, perhaps closer to 3 million people that came out of those 70 in just the 400 years. And in Exodus chapter 2 and verse 24, and God heard their groanings, and God rewarded his covenant with Abraham and with Isaac and with Jacob. They didn't forget about it, and God did not forget about it. And as the people cried out for deliverance, God brought a man by the name of Moses, and you know his story, how that God brought him up in the very courts of Pharaoh, and eventually uses Moses to deliver the people. And in Exodus chapter 6 and in verse 8, God appears to him and he says, Moses, I will bring you into the land concerning the which I did swear to give it to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob, and I will give it you for an inheritance. I am the Lord. And 400 years later, God comes along and he reminds Moses, if Moses needed reminding, of the covenant, the promise that he had made to Abraham and passed it on through Isaac and then to Jacob. And now for 400 years in their bondage, God has not forgiven about that. And he says to Moses, you go down there and you tell Pharaoh to let my people go. And Moses wasn't all that keen about going. And God eventually convinced him, and he did go, and Pharaoh was less keener about God's message than Moses was to deliver it. But 10 plagues later, and with the firstborn of all the Egyptians dead, they finally decided, we better let the people go. And God brings them out with this great abundance. They end up there at the Red Sea with Moses, or with Pharaoh, with a change of heart, pursuing them, and God opens that sea up, and they march across on dry ground, and when Pharaoh and his army come through, why, they are all drowned. And they end up over on the other side, and they go down to Mount Sinai, where God gives to them the Ten Commandments, eventually leads them up to Kadesh Barnea, and he said, all right, now we are ready to go into the promised land. And Moses sends out the spies, and the spies, 10 of them came back, and they said, listen, there are giants in the land. There is no way that we can take it. We are going to get slaughtered. We're going to die here, but there is no way that we can go in and possess the land. And only Joshua and Caleb said, no, God has given to us. Let us go in at once and possess it. But the people who heard the report made up their mind, no, we can't do it. And so God said, all right, for your disobedience, every one of you who are above the age of 20 years of age are going to die out here in the next 40 years, and only your children are going to go in. And so for 40 years they wander. God gives them the institution for the tabernacle, which is set up and initiated during that period of time. And during those 40 years, lo and behold, everybody who was 20 years and above died, and only the children. And then at the end of those 40 years, God is ready to take them into the land. And before he goes, in Deuteronomy chapter 28, God has Joshua lead them into a new covenant. And I suppose we could call that the Mosaic Covenant. And it's important for us to realize that God here is going to now add a condition about the land. Now, the original condition does not change. God had given to Abraham a unconditional promise that is going to be eternal about this land which he had given. The ownership of it belongs to Abraham and to his seed forever. But now this Mosaic covenant that they are about to enter into makes possession of that land contingent upon their obedience. They own it, but they only possess it when they are in obedience with God. Disobedient, God said, I'm going to drive you out of the land. And other people are going to possess it, even though it belongs to you. And so in chapter 28, verse 1, he says, if you hearken to my commandments, I will set you on high above all nations. Verse 2, blessings shall come on your cities and fields and bodies and flocks. Verse 7, your enemies will be smitten. Verse 9, and you will be established as a holy people. But if you will not hearken to the commandments, I will curse you. In verse 16, your cities, your fields, the fruit of your body. Verse 18, the increase of your flock. Verse 22, I'll smite you with sickness. You will be smitten by your enemies. In verse 25, you will be few in number and not as the stars of heaven. In verse 62, you will be plucked from off the land that you go in to possess. In verse 63 and in verse 64, you will be scattered among all the peoples of the world. So in a very real way, as he leads them into this, then what is going to happen to them, blessing and cursing, is dependent upon them. Now, this Mosaic covenant did not change any of the conditions. It just meant that possession of the land would be based upon their obedience. And the people entered into the covenant. And it says, and these are the words of the covenant which the Lord God commanded Moses to make with the children of Israel in the land of Moab, besides the covenant which he had made with them at Mount Horeb or Sinai, which is the Ten Commandments. And then again in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 1 through 8, God reiterates that blessing and cursing is a matter of their choice. But they now are about to enter into this land of Canaan. It has been filled with idolatry and pagan worship, and particularly the worship of Baal. And God hated it. He wanted to keep his people from being polluted as they go in to possess this land that God had given to them. And he said, you just choose. If you obey me and keep my commandments, then the blessing of God is going to be upon you. If you don't, disaster is going to come upon you. And they enter into that, and God takes Moses up there on top of Mount Nebo, and he looks out from Mount Pisgah into the Promised Land and dies, and God buries him. And Joshua came down the hill and led the people into the Promised Land. And at this point, we finish the first five books of the Bible, which is known as the Law. And now we're going to come to that historical section where the people actually go in and to possess the land that God had given to them. Moses, or Joshua, crosses the Jordan on dry ground. He's been commanded of God to march around the city seven times, blow the trumpets, and the walls fall down. And from there they go to this next little city, which is just an absolute pushover. It is so small, by the name of Ai, and they were so confident of it, but because of Achan's sin, they were defeated. And after Achan was taken care of, they then are ready to push onward. And you remember that God told them to go in and to destroy everything that was befriend of them. Don't enter into agreements and everything. But how they were deceived by the Gibeonites And they do end up making a covenant with them because they would rather be the carriers of water and the hewers of wood than to be dead and to be annihilated. But after they had made this, the king of Jerusalem makes a military alliance with a number of other kings that were down there, the king of Hebron and Jarmuth and Lachmuth and Eglon, and they move against these Gibeonites. And because of the alliance that Joshua has entered into, he has to come to their defense, and he makes this long night march from Gilgad and caught this little alliance moving against them by surprise, and they fled in absolute terror. And you remember this is where Joshua pursues them, and the sun stands still in the heavens until they annihilate those people and to wipe them out. And then from there, he pushes where they had entered. You've got the land of Canaan here with the Lake of Galilee up here and the Dead Sea down here and the Jordan River in between. And over here you've got the Mediterranean. And so he enters right about the middle of the land and shoots across and divides the land. Then he takes and moves southward with the land divided. And then eventually up here in the north, these kings make an alliance against him. And after he has finished going southward, well, then they strike out and reach northward and begin to take that land that God had given to them. Now, at the end of Joshua's life, he had been so busy trying to possess the land that God had given to them that he did not train a leader. And when he died, everybody did that which was right in their own sight, and as a result of it, there was absolute disaster. Because these people who had been kind of nomads living out there in those deserts were now coming in and destroying everything before them, taking lands and cities and all the rest. And their lifestyle was changing from being nomads into becoming farmers and shepherds and craftsmen and city dwellers. But as they get involved with the people of Canaan, they also get involved with their heathen worship. And God is distraught over this, and there's no leader to stand up and to say, we're not going to do this. And before long, Israel is in sin. And consequently, the curse of God comes upon them. He begins to scatter them. They begin to lose the land and other people to possess it, even though it belongs to them. And during this time, God raises up judges who were military leaders to rescue the people from time to time and to take back part of that land which God had given to them. And some of those great judges who ruled, Deborah and Barak, who opened the plains of Jezreel so that the tribes of Zebulun and Ishkar and Naphtali were no longer cut off from their brethren, but they had been cut off. And now he opens that up and gives them, you know, that very important pass there and that place that we call Megiddo, or where the great final Battle of Armageddon is going to take place. And then there's guys like Gideon, where the Midianites had taken over in the Transjordan on the other side of the River Jordan, that they kind of come in out of the desert, and with 300 men he drives them back into the desert after destroying a good part. And then, of course, there's Samson, and he lives down here in the south out towards the Mediterranean there in an area which is called the Sheplas. And the Philistines inhabited that, and he killed them until Delilah eventually deceived him, and his life is put out. but it was these military leaders there who kind of rescued the people and helped them to regain the land. But this is one of the darkest hours of Israel's history to this point. And then eventually the people get tired. Everyone else is ruled by a king. And they said to Samuel, we want a king. And to make a long story short, God, you know, finally said to Samuel, it isn't you that they're rejecting, it's me. And we're going to give them a king if that's what they want. And Saul is anointed as the first king of Israel. He started out well. He ended up in absolute disaster. His pride and arrogance, his disobedience to God. Eventually, God says, I want you to go down and anoint David. And he is going to be the king of Israel. And next week, that is where we're going to take off, where we have now gone from being ruled by a theocracy, where God to a monarchy. And then God comes back in this promise that he had given to Abraham over here. God is now going to renew in the person of David. And that promise that God had given to Abraham, of course, draws us all the way back to the promise that God had given to Adam and his wife.